The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
How former angry lead striker Alan Smith helped create an everyday cliche in Korea. Running's coming home. Barry from EastEnders does his bit for the Lionesses. A footballing dissection of the phrase whisper it quietly, but the big Premier League manager or head coach quiz for 2022-23. Who are the most breath of fresh airiest team in Premier League history? And a surreal turn for the global cult of Peter Drury. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 177 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me, he's back after five pods away. His longest spell out, the data says, since his seven pod absence in and around August 2021, Charlie Eccleshare, how's it going?
Good. It's good to be back. It's been a long five episodes, let me tell you.
But you've been up to a lot.
Yeah.
And more on that soon.
Okay, yeah, we'll trail that.
Yeah. Alongside you for the adjudication panel today is David Walker. How's it going?
Very well. To kick off, actually, before we get into the adjudication panel proper, I have an item that I would like you and Charlie to adjudicate on, please. Settle an ongoing dispute amongst some of my friends. So over the weekend, in one of our WhatsApp groups, one of my mates, Jay, he sent a picture around of a training ground, nondescript training ground, like peering through the fences, saying, lads, I've just come across this training ground today. See if you can guess which one it is. You can have five questions about it and have two guesses of what it is, right? And so I know he lives in Manchester. So I wanted to establish straight away whether it was Premier League or EFL. So I said, is it an EFL club? To which he responded, no. So, okay, it's a Premier League club. So I know he lives in Manchester. So I'm thinking, well, it's either, unless he's gone on a trip to Liverpool or somewhere, I think it must be Manchester City or Manchester United. He lives closer to Man City. So I thought, wait, is it Man City? No. Was it Man United then? No. And then so I was scratching my head and I'm thinking, well, is he on business? Is it Leeds? Is it Liverpool? Was he somehow down in London? Like what's, I was sort of really coming up short. And he went, I think you're getting tripped up on the fact that the season hasn't started yet and the Community Shield hasn't been.
What?
So I went, oh, what? So you're saying it's Burnley? And he was like, yeah, it's Burnley. I said, well, they're an EFL club. They're definitely an EFL club. They've been relegated. Like, and he's like, no, well, the season hasn't started yet. So they're not. They're still the Premier. No, they're not.
No, that's.
And then everyone else got involved and they were like sending me pictures of like 442 season preview saying, oh, well, you can't preview something that's already begun. And like there was this ridiculous argument about the semantics of when does the season start, which I actually think is a separate issue from whether a club is in a certain division or not. The two things don't have to twin up.
I completely agree with this. There's a long running debate about when last season becomes this season, or this season becomes next season, all that sort of stuff. And there are many cut-off points for this. Someone might say it's when the league tables officially get reset to zero on various media platforms. That seems to me to be the most sensible way of doing it. July the 1st is a very important date in football administratively. That's okay. But I think the season-centric rules here, Charlie, don't apply. Once you're relegated, you are a championship club. You are in both spirit and essentially football-wise, because you're not going to be playing a Premier League game anytime soon.
Yeah, especially once the fixtures are out. I mean, your games are set. You're preparing for a championship match.
Do you want to come back up?
Until the Thursday before the season starts, you're still a Premier League club. Still counts, you know.
Until 2:59 p.m. on August the 5th.
But I think there probably is a point at which you can have this debate, but I think we're way past that point.
Yeah, Jay's full of shit. Full of shit, Jay. Well, that leads us nicely into the adjudication panel. Charlie, you've been in Korea.
Yes.
And of all the fascinating things that you got involved in over there, this is perhaps the most curious of all and the most relevant for our purposes too. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, this is this is one of my favourite things ever. Hat tip to James Moore, who reminded me of this, that an old, a former Korean colleague of ours once told him that there's this this idiom that's developed in Korea called Leeds Days. And essentially what this means is Leeds Days is kind of like the time of your life, your peak. Right, okay. You know, it's the sort of halcyon period.
Salad days.
Exactly, yeah, right. Exactly. And it started out, Park Ji-sung, when he was playing for Man United, obviously there was a big Korean following of the team, and Alan Smith was playing for United at that time. And it became a running joke that he was way better at Leeds than he was at United. And it was a kind of thing like, oh yeah, those were his Leeds days. And now it's become an idiom in Korean language where they will use it.
Wow.
both to tease people in a way, like you might look at a picture of, say, an 18-year-old Dave and say, those were your Leeds days, mate.
This
you know,
is so good.
Sort of like, yeah, you passed your best. Or I might wistfully be talking about, oh yeah, that period when I was at school, those were my Leeds days. And it's genuinely developed as a thing. I mean, like, it's pretty, from some of the people I was speaking to, they were saying, of a certain generation, even if you're not into football, you'll know what Leeds days means. And they do track the days bit is translated into Korean generally. But it's just, I just love when things like this develop organically, and that this football phrase can have grown on the other side of the world. I just think there's something magical about it.
There are so many aspects of this which I love. The first one being just the poise of it. I mean, the practical usage of it, especially, you know, outside of a football context, is just looking at an old picture of someone. So the way that it's just moved between those two spheres. Secondly, the obscure, relatively obscure origins of it. I mean, it's very charming that it went from sort of Leeds United to Korea, which I know obviously the Park Ji-sung connection helped it along. But I love the fact that it came from not a massively important footballing event. And then the third thing is that it actually means the opposite to what we call doing a Leeds. It's the opposite effect of where doing a Leeds is something, you know, things plummeting from grace. And it means the opposite. It's fantastic.
And you're here as well, because when James mentioned this, he, you know, I took it upon myself. I wanted to ask some Koreans about it to see if this really was a thing. But I was just so surprised, and kind of I didn't quite believe it until I spoke to a couple and they explained it to me.
So do like lots of people know about it in Korea?
Everybody knows.
Everyone knows about it.
Yeah,
that is so
even
funny.
even those people who doesn't know anything about Leeds,
yeah,
they know this expression.
How do you say it in Korea? Do they say Leeds days or do they say it in Korea?
Leeds 시절. In Korean, it says Leeds 시절. 시절 means period.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Leeds period, this time.
So would your parents know what it means?
Not for old people.
But for younger people,
yeah.
They would all know what it means.
From 20, from teenagers on, I mean, I think maybe 40 or even 50 years old. Those people would understand, know that.
It's just the fact that it's Alan Smith as well. And not at all pivotal figure in English football history, modern or otherwise.
And to has be the shaped centre of this. The Korean language.
It's incredible. Like you, I love how this has happened and how this continues to happen. It's an absolute treat. Similar effect on me, this. This is from Ben Stevens, who seemingly spent 6 hours of one of his days watching county championship cricket commentary on YouTube. This is from the county championship clash between Gloucestershire and Hampshire. And Hampshire ticking along, 73 without loss. And I wanted to kind of gently take the piss out of this commentary, but the reality of it is that they sound just like us.
The other one I want to include there is a guy playing at the moment. He's an Australian who sounds more like a hotel than a cricketer, and goes by the name of Hilton Cartwright.
There is Chappell in again. Holland defends. Well, the line that a good friend of ours, Dave Bradley, used to come up with was, could you name motorway service stations who might have been cricketers. So Taunton Deane, for example. Would Taunton Deane have been a... Would Taunton Deane have been a potential service station?
Potentially, yeah. That's a good one. Newport Pagnell?
Yeah, Newport Pagnell, potentially. There isn't one at Frampton Cotterill, but there could be one.
Yeah.
This is nice, isn't it, Dave? Nice to see people engaging in the sort of granular,
yeah,
quaint, twee.
I think they could do with
chat.
A little bit of an edit, to be honest, but I like the spirit of it for sure.
Well, you've got to fill the time. It's 6 hours, mate.
yeah.
Anything goes. Charlie, just that's right up our street, isn't it? I think we should start doing footballers that sound like service stations too.
It is, yeah. I hope we don't make the same self-satisfied laughs after them, but we probably do. To be honest,
that was very cricket, wasn't it?
We do.
Yeah. Great laugh. let's stay away from football for a little while longer. Stephen writes in and says, I heard someone on BBC's athletics coverage saying Nafi Tiam, the heptathlete, has strength in depth. Dave, how do you feel about that for an individual? I think it's absolutely perfect, frankly.
Well, I suppose it does. Yeah. I mean, if they're doing seven events, is it not a given that you should be pretty good at most of them?
I think that is a thing. There are quite a lot of heptathletes who do have a sort of clear weakness. I think someone like Katarina Johnson-Thompson would fit into that category. I mean, you might describe them as an all-rounder. That's kind of what you're saying, isn't it? Or
if they're an all-rounder suggests that maybe you're very good at everything, but it's a bit jack of all trades.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas strength in depth could mean that you actually by far and away the best in five of the seven of the categories, the disciplines.
I do quite like that idea because it's almost as if you, in the same way you would pick a team and you can pick from various different things, you can almost, you're so good as a heptathlete, you can say, I'm really going to focus on my energies on this event because I feel I'm sort of strong enough in that I don't need to put everything into it. So it's almost like, you know, they're going to be like team news for her at the start of of each event where she's kind of revealing how much effort she's going to put in to the various disciplines.
Look at the options she's got available.
Exactly, yeah. But you need that. It's a squad game now.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's stick with athletics. I love, love, love this. Sorry to go all Greg Wallace on you, but I'd loved it. This is from Glyn Jones. Jake Whiteman was a surprise 1500-metre gold medalist for Team GB at the World Championships in Oregon last week. The further twist was that his dad, Jeff, was the in-stadium commentator for the event. And this is from the report from The Times. Up in the stands, Whiteman Sr. remained impressively composed, even if not entirely impartial. Running, it's coming home, he declared. I think the ancient Greeks will have something to say about this, Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. Marathon, etc. They want a word.
We didn't invent running, did we?
No, I mean...
We didn't. But also, aren't the World Championship being held in Oregon, which is that not like sort of kind of the home
Nike
of running?
Town.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like it's sort of already home.
Yeah. We're not even in the top five in the queue for being the home of running, surely.
Yeah, exactly.
You got your Kenyas, your Ethiopias.
Yeah.
Your Oregons. Where else?
Jamaica.
Well, running, USA and Jamaica. Yeah.
Yeah, all the big ones.
Other powerhouses.
Yeah, absolutely. But just wonderful. And by all accounts, a very professional guy and obviously had a very important job to do. But if you're going to lose it in that way, as far as I'm concerned. Let's get back to football, though. Dave, are England really a major tournament until this happens?
Oh, he's made it his own.
So, yes, this is, of course, Sean Barry from EastEnders Williamson at Box Park Croydon, I assume. Charlie, this is like a residency now. This is like Celine Dion in Las Vegas.
The amazing thing is, I couldn't even, on that clip, I couldn't even see him because he was so in the distance. But as soon as it's, you know, I mean, his style is so.
It's just amazing.
It's so familiar.
Inimitable.
He'll never beat the bowls, that appearance at the bowls. But
just one of the greatest moments in British culture.
Genuinely, yeah, incredible.
Dave, might have to put this clip out on Twitter, but the pyrotechnics, the sort of slightly pathetic pyrotechnics behind him, just looked like two sparklers on Guy Fawkes night.
It is tragic, really, in a lot of ways. I assume that was before the game, I think.
Yeah, it must have been.
And
yeah.
It was like there was sort of a handful of people were sort of doing the so good fist pumps. Most people were just sort of getting on, eating their massively overpriced burger and chips before watching the game or whatever they were doing. I mean, poor old Barry. He's got to do it, hasn't he, really? But sweet Caroline, it's already been done to death. When's it ever going to end? Is that just going to be it now forever? We're going to have sweet Caroline. All because of one. The brilliant thing about it was its spontaneous moment at England v Germany in the Euros last 16 last year. Now it's just like every sporting event, no matter what it is, it's just got to play Sweet Caroline before, during and after.
But it was already, by then, it was already a big thing at the boxing, wasn't it? Basically, every big fight. But, I mean, how in on the joke do we think Barry is? I mean, does he know, when he gets those bookings, does he know it's...
I
for gag purposes,
so.
And he's just like, you know, he's a good
sport.
Well,
he was on extras, wasn't he?
He was,
which I think,
yeah.
Which denotes a base level of self-awareness. But no, I don't think he's got any delusions of grandeur about this at all. But yeah, there's definitely a residency situation going on there. Fair play to him. I hope he's getting well rewarded for it. Charlie, I've been really looking forward to confronting you with this because I feel like it's right up your street. I want to talk about the occasional football journalism device of the phrase, whisper it quietly, but... Now, I only say it's up your street for two reasons. One, I think you know exactly what we're talking about here. And two, I have a strong suspicion that you may have used it at some point. That's fine if you have.
I don't know about that.
You're very whisper it quietly, butty, I have to say.
No, I'm not whisper it quietly, but.
You are? You're very much a more on that later.
I admit I'm
so
a more on that later.
You might be a whisper it quietly,
but. I think more on that later serves a purpose because it's sort of trailing something. And it's sort of, you might, if someone doesn't read the whole thing, they might think like, oh, he dealt with that pretty cursorily. Whereas it's letting the reader know, like, don't worry, we will come back to this.
Okay, that's fine.
Whisper it quietly, no, I'm not. And it is, you're right to bring it up. I'm amazed you haven't talked about it before because it's had a big increase in the last few years that was suddenly everywhere.
But, okay. You took that in reasonably good grace, actually, with just the right amount of offence. But, Dave, when you see or read the phrase, whisper it, optionally, quietly, but, what sort of things are being whispered here? What sort of sentiments are being got across?
Is it pejorative or
a compliment? I don't think it is. I think it's sort of vaguely complimentary.
Is it sort of whisper it quietly, but something might be happening here?
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah. Whisper it quietly, but player X is starting to really impress down there at Dean Court.
Or a manager, you know, whisper it, or owners. I think it's often about ownership. So there's a really, whisper it quietly, but the much maligned owners of Club X have actually
whisper it quietly. Whisper it quietly, but you know what? The Venkies have actually really knuckled down.
That's it. I think you've nailed it here. And it's someone doing a better job than might have been expected, but also with a hint of controversy. So like that, we all thought they were going to be terrible for this football club. We all thought they were going to be a real poisoned presence. But no, they're really turning it around. So yeah, I mean, but also, do we have to say quietly? Do you have to whisper it quietly, Charlie?
Yeah,
can you just say, whisper it?
That is tautologous. But I guess it really hammers the point home that you really want to... I mean, and also what I find slightly annoying sometimes with the whisper it quietly is that it's not a particularly controversial take.
Yes,
so
that's absolutely
like,
right.
Why do I need to whisper that quietly or otherwise? Like, isn't everyone sort of now in agreement about this? You know, like, whisper it quietly, but is Sweet Caroline a bit overplayed at sporting events? Like, you don't need to whisper that. Everyone agrees with you, clearly.
So... would you say, on average, Charlie, that it's a less controversial take than if you prefaced it with, is it just me, but... Which is a take on a rather gammony thing anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't gammonize, whisper it quietly, but would you? Probably not.
There's also
whisper it quietly, but the French are definitely to blame for all the blockages.
Yeah, exactly. There's also that thing, isn't there, is like, is it okay to, like, you know, is it okay to like someone yet? Like, is it okay to admit that X is doing a good job yet? Which is the same sort of thing.
I know what you mean.
I've just typed whisper it quietly in quote marks into Twitter, and the first one I've seen is whisper it quietly, but Jack Grealish has looked class in pre-season.
That's a rubbish whisper it quietly. Just say it. It's fine. There's nothing to whisper. That's insane. Really do need to set some standards here. We will revisit this at some point, I promise.
I've got another one from a chap called James, who's quote tweeting a signing announcement from Doncaster Rovers saying, whisper it quietly, we might not be terrible this season.
That's more along the right lines, I would say.
Do you know what there could be by the end of this transfer window? There could be a whisper it quietly, but have United actually done some quite smart business? Because they're so maligned for their transfer dealings. It obviously started off really slowly and everyone was like, they haven't signed anyone. But actually, whisper it quietly and I think they've done some quite shrewd work.
It goes very much hand in hand with shrewd business.
Exactly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right, we were talking earlier, Dave, about what really is the kind of real bookmark for a start of the season. This might be it. It's the publication of the official Premier League handbook, which contains all the information you could possibly want to know for all 20 Premier League clubs. I did what I always did and went in and tried to find the most overqualified groundsman of all 20 Premier League clubs. It was much of a much, and it's not much has changed over the last 12 months or so, but I can reveal that whilst most clubs, Dave, call their ground staff or groundspeople or groundsmen, Arsenal, they've taken it up a notch.
Oh, no.
Theirs is called Head of Horticulture and Playing Surface Operations.
No.
Horticulture. They've not got flowers on the pitch.
Playing Surface Operations. Grass blade alignment.
Are all those words in true football style capitalised as well?
Absolutely
of the title?
Right. Okay, yeah, good. As all job titles really shouldn't be. Fantastic stuff. Well done to Paul Ashcroft for engineering that in your next contract negotiation. Fantastic. But what also dawned on me is that this might be unprecedented. I've got no inclination to go back and check in previous handbooks. But in 2022-23, there is an equal split in the Premier League between managers and head coaches.
Ooh.
10 and 10. So I thought, let's have a quiz. So you will go first, Dave Walker. AFC Bournemouth's Scott Parker, head coach or manager?
Head coach.
Correct. Charlie Ecochere, Arsenal's Mikel Arteta.
Manager.
Yes, indeed. First team manager. Dave, Aston Villa's Steven Gerrard.
Oh, I've got a feeling it might be. He is obviously old school manager, but I've got a feeling they might have the head coach structure. I'm going to go head coach.
Correct. 2-1, Dave Walker. Charlie, Brentford's Thomas Frank.
Oh, that's a tricky one because he's senior enough to be manager, but they're also so analytics-y and all of that that I feel they'd all have quite bespoke, specific titles. Brentford head coach Thomas Frank. I'll go head coach.
Yeah, of course he is. Of course he is, yeah. 2-2. Dave, over to Brighton and Hove Albion's Graham Potter.
Oh, you're really choosing the borderline ones, aren't you? do I go with three head coaches in a row? Brighton head coach Graham Potter, Brighton manager.
But for beleaguered Brighton manager.
I'm going to stick with head coach.
Yeah, you're right. It's 3-2. Charlie, Chelsea's Thomas Tuchel.
Head coach.
3-3. Dave, Crystal Palace's Patrick Vieira.
I'm going to go manager.
Yeah, 4-3. Well done, Dave. Charlie, Everton's Frank Lampard.
Head coach.
Manager.
Yes, come on.
I have to say, I thought that would be a slam dunk. Dave retains a 4-3 lead going into Fulham's Marco Silva.
Fulham's head coach, Marco Silva.
5-3. Ooh. Charlie, Leeds is Jesse Marsh. American citizen.
Manager.
Oh, 5-3 it remains. Of course he's a head coach. What are you doing?
I feel like there are lots of managers still left out there because they all seem to have been head coaches. So I thought I'd play the numbers.
5 episodes out. He is rusty as hell. 5-3. Dave, Leicester City's Brendan Rodgers.
I think he's manager.
6-3. Liverpool's Jurgen Klopp, Charlie.
He must be manager.
6-4. Manchester City's Pep Guardiola, Dave.
I think he's manager.
7-4. Flawless from you so far. Manchester United's Erik ten Hag.
Head coach?
Manager.
Really?
7-4.
He's so recent, I just thought any big club now would...
I know,
Fergie wouldn't allow for United to have a head coach, would he?
I actually speculate that might well be the case. Dave, Newcastle United's Eddie Howe.
Steve Bruce can't have been head coach, but have they changed it when Eddie Howe came in? I'm going to go head coach.
8-4.
Just while I was listening to the excellent episode on the Olympics, the Team GB, I thought he would be such a good manager for that team. He's earnest, he's thoughtful. Crucially, he's so BBC, which the Olympics is so BBC, and I could just picture Gabby Logan or someone to be like, it's not bad, this is it. And him be like,
that's a good shout.
And be like, listen, it's been, it's exceeded all my expectations as he sort of looks out at the crowd.
He's very Olympics, actually. He could do a
so
he could
clean
be, he
cut
could be like
on Olympics.
A sailor or something
exactly.
like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's quite middle distance, I think.
he could be a heptathlete. Good strength and depth.
Eddie Howe will lead GB off in the 4x400 meter relay. Anyway, don't try and distract me from getting pummeled in the manager or head coach quiz, Charlie. Nottingham Forest's Steve Cooper.
Manager.
8-5. Southampton's Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Head coach.
He's a manager.
Oh.
Charlie can pull it back to 8-6.
Dave is human after all.
With Tottenham Hotspur's Antonio Conte.
Head coach.
Yes, 8-6. I believe. Dave, West Ham United's David Moyes.
Manager.
9-6. We might as well round things off with Charlie, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Bruno Lage. Make it respectable.
I mean, my instinct is head coach, just because, you know, it's a manager who has no say in transfers and things like that. So I'll go head coach. And if it isn't, it's a joke because he is only the head coach.
You're absolutely right. I don't think there was any doubt in that whatsoever. 9-7.
Okay.
Dave takes it, easing up on the line there. Very rusty preseason form for you, Charlie. But let's not read too much into it, really. It's not early days. The results, just the performance, which also was shit. Yes.
Yeah, but it's just minutes in the legs, isn't it?
Minutes in the legs. Not even under the belt, man. Can't believe it. Can't believe it. Love this one. This is from George Culkin and Chris Woff's Athletic Long Read on the parallels between Newcastle's 1992-93 season and their current state 30 years on. There's a sense of hope around St James's. And Charlie, one of the voices for this piece was John Beresford, former Newcastle left-back.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that the change has been amazing. So let's not get ahead of ourselves, but it's exciting times. All I ask for is to have a right good go in the cups. I would put that in the top three, sort of beyond parody Newcastle. They love a number nine up here.
So was he? So he is talking there about the present day. He's not saying that was the view back in 1996. Okay. I mean, if that would be in my manager's in tray, if I was taking over Newcastle, I would just the in tray would be say you're up for the cups, even if you're not. Like that is just absolutely critical.
I realise it's an understandable thing to aim for, Dave, for a fan base and maybe a club too. But just the flippant nature of just have a good go in the cups. Have a right good go at the cups. Cups are hard.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just easy. They're not just like eight games and you've won two trophies.
Harder City than win them every season.
Yeah. It's arguably harder than it's ever been to get to a final of a cup, let alone win it. Because routinely the FA Cup semi-finals in particular are City, Liverpool, United, Chelsea, maybe Arsenal. Like, that's the way it goes. And if you're lucky, you know, and if you do somehow manage to get through, you don't want to play City in the FA Cup final at Wembley. Trust me.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
But I mean, as I was saying to my wife, Charlie, the other night, I said, this year I just want to have a right good go at the National Lottery. Right good go. Really prioritise.
Take it seriously.
Put all the best numbers out every week.
Stop resting all the best numbers.
So good. Right. Next up, Dave, have I got a career path for you? Via Reggio, Pisa, Brescia, Napoli, Sampdoria, Siena, Pisa on loan, Lecce, back to Pisa, Pontedera, currently at 10th tier, Northern Counties Eastern League outfit, Beverley Town. That, David Walker, is Daniele Manini, who at this stage...
Of course.
Yeah, let's just point out at this stage, he has the most made-up Italian name for like Dream Team already. I'd never heard of him, I have to say. But it is a very Italian footballery name. But Charlie, he's a 38-year-old Italian midfielder, former winger with Brescia, Napoli, Sampdoria, et al. He was out walking his dog because he's moved to East Yorkshire to work as a sales executive for a food ingredient supplier. And he was out walking his dog, encountered the chairman of Beverley Town, Mark Smith, and is now playing for them.
Wow.
At 200 Serie A appearances, he's now playing in the 10th series. Only 38. He's going to be unreal, right? He's going to be unbelievably good.
This is a very Dream Team sort of scenario, playing out real life. What an interview he'll be, by the way.
Honestly, we desperately need to get hold of him. If we don't do it...
No one else will.
No one else will, sorry. But yeah, looking forward to... I just want to go down there and see just how much better he is than everybody else in the 10th tier of English football. But yeah, one to watch, no doubt. Nottingham Forest, very newsworthy in recent
Championship
days.
Championship club, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
According to Jay, probably.
Don't get us in trouble with the Forest fans. They are very, very alert at the moment. But they played a Hertha Berlin in a pre-season friendly the other day, Dave. And they went 2-0 up, and their Twitter account tweeted out the following. It's two. Awanui's pressure forces Jarstein into an error before Lyle picks out the back of the net with a fantastic finish from the edge of the area. Forest fan David Marples writes here, says, can one pick out the back of the net? Feels more conventional to find the back of the net. One tends to pick out a teammate with a long raking ball. He's bang on, is he? You can't pick out the back of the net.
Absolutely. He's completely nailed it, yeah. Find the back of the net, pick out a long pass.
Or pick your spot. Pick your spot.
Yeah, but you're not picking out a spot. And you can't pick out the top corner or anything. Nothing. There's not even precise parts of the goal count.
I think you could have, like, hits the back of the net, slams it into the back of the net.
Yeah, sure. All of those are fine.
Yeah.
They're not having it. It's a subtle one, but nonetheless, really wanted to do it. I tweeted the other day, Charlie, that there was huge pressure on Steve Cooper's Nottingham Forest to be this season's official Premier League breath of fresh air.
Mm.
Because I feel like it's mandatory. If they fail, we may need to look elsewhere for a breath of fresh air. Perhaps even internally, there were some suspicions that Crystal Palace could be a breath of fresh air, having left the Roy Hodgson era.
Mm.
They sort of were that last year.
Yeah,
exactly. But Dave Kevin Williams posed the ultimate question here. Which team has been the freshest of breath of fresh air teams in the Premier League era? I'm biased, he says, but it has to be Bielsa's Leeds in 2021. I put them up there. I put them up there in the top three breaths of fresh air.
They were definitely, they're definitely up there. I think Ipswich, that team that came up in 2000, 2001 and came fifth that season.
Fifth, yeah.
Because they played well. They obviously got amazing results, but they also, it felt like they played pretty good football at that time.
Marcus Stewart.
Exactly, yeah. Marcus Stewart, Matty Holland.
Dave, I think it's easy to fall into a trap here of just saying any team who have come up for the first time are breaths of fresh air. Barnsley, not having them as a breath of fresh air. Any team who are in the first Premier League season, by definition, couldn't have been a breath of fresh air.
Everyone was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I don't know. Are we being too Premier League centric here? You could have been a breath of fresh air compared to 91-92.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not a default setting. I think you have to have something distinct about you. I think playing good football or playing football in a slightly different way, surprising way.
So carefree.
I think Sheffield United, with their overlapping centre-backs a few seasons ago, were a breath of fresh air.
Bang on.
Swansea, 2011-12. Yep. Brendan Rodgers played great football with Joe Allen and Leon Britton and all of that.
I actually think they're possibly up there right at the very top. I also offer you Ian Holloway's Blackpool.
Yeah.
Yes.
2010-11.
I think you it's important to retain something of the underdog about you. So I think the reason that Forest are in danger of giving that all up by signing so many players, can you be a breath of fresh air if you've bought Jesse Lingard?
It does muddy the waters a little bit.
a philosophical question that's been plaguing people sometimes.
But it does still lend itself to positive football, though, doesn't it? Even if you splash a bit of cash, I still think that you can be a breath of fresh air.
And I think Steve Cooper is very breath of fresh air-y as well.
Yeah.
And also to add a point of what a job he's doing up there.
Oh, God.
He's so in that. But I think what's important as well, linking back to Beresford's giving it a good go, I think that's really important. And so sometimes it's a team, because it doesn't have to be newly promoted. It can, like Palace last season, it can be one that's just come on a long way.
You sure?
Well, so I'll give you an example of one that I think this is quite niche in a way, but in 2014-15, Southampton were like up in the top four spots around January, and they went and beat United at Old Trafford. And I think you might have said, you know what? They've been a breath of fresh air. We're used to having the same teams in the top four every season. We've got this team coming up. They're giving it a go. They're taking on the big boys. They've been a breath of fresh air for me.
I know what you mean. And the sentiment is absolutely right. I mean, it should only be a footballing thing. But I also think there's a huge part of this, Dave, is about being new and being sort of just a new thing to look at.
But sometimes
as well as being something to breathe in.
A new manager can sometimes do that, though.
You're probably right. But yeah, also Brighton as well, when they first came up, breath of fresh air. Bournemouth under Eddie Howe.
I'm not sure Brighton were,
because Brighton didn't do anything particularly spectacular.
Because this was the Houghton era, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay. Fair
but
enough.
What about Wolves finished seventh, didn't they, in their season when they came up under Nuno? But I don't feel they were like a breath of fresh air, really.
But again, that's because they had players. But they had players who were clearly too good for the Championship.
Yeah.
It wasn't the sort of, wow, this is amazing. They're like massively punching above their weight.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, a nice little dig into that concept, because it really did need our attention. So did this. I know last week we spoke about the Butcher of Amsterdam, Dave. Lisandro Martinez signing for Manchester United. I couldn't ignore this, though, from Simon Constantini, who absolutely nailed this pretend quote. And we almost need Charlie to read it out, but I'm going to say it anyway. He says, "Is there a more catnip to the proper football men signing this summer than 5'9", untested in the Premier League, manager's pet centre-half Lisandro Martinez? Can already imagine the, if I'm a striker, standing next to him in the tunnel, I'm licking my lips." How good is that? I have to admire the work, Charlie.
That is absolutely. I'm sorry. Look, I know the game's changed, but there are basics. That is absolutely spot on. I just can't wait for him to be out jumped at a corner and Keezy to get into that.
Oh my God!
Can you imagine?
What was he? 5 foot? 5 foot six? 5 foot seven?
Andy, you were a striker,
I believe. anyway,
Andy, two words for you, Fabio Cannavaro.
Be in sports, of course. Oh, that's it. That's going to seal the deal. That's it. Diplomatic immunity for anybody under 5'9". Right, let's...
He could jump my mind, though, you know. But
let's deal with some pre-season matters. Tottenham, you may have seen, Charlie, overcame Rangers 2-1 at Ibrox. But not, some reports said, after suffering an early scare. You can't have an early scare in a friendly, can you?
No, I don't think so. Not when it's all about minutes on the legs, etc., etc.
No, early scares too much. But Dave, furthermore, Sam writes in, an early scare after 24 minutes. That's too late for an early scare, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're past the halfway point in the first half.
Mm. I mean, that's still technically a scare in a competitive game, but not an early scare. It could have been a scare.
Survived a scare.
Yeah. This is very much an elephant in the pre-season room, Charlie, but it's time for us to finally address it. Goody11 writes in, says, I can't believe we have to have this debate every summer, but one, a goal in a friendly by a new signing is not their first goal for the club. Now, I want to kind of get into the nuance of the language here. It is their first goal for their new club. Absolutely fine. It's their first goal in the club shirt. That's also very good for pre-season. Very acceptable. I would even accept club a goal colours. On their debut. Anything. Debuts are fine for pre-season. I've no issue with that. All I would say is I would not accept new signing X has opened their account for their new club, because opening your account is an official thing. It's an official goal tally, or it implies an official goal tally, which obviously friendlies don't count towards. So I think that's the line.
Can we agree, though, that even if you can say debut now in a pre-season friendly or whatever, we don't have to say competitive debut or whatever on the opening Premier League weekend. We can just say debut again. Because it's surely understood that they might have played some pre-season friendlies, but it's still their debut. I don't think we have to be saying competitive debut. I think people can just accept that,
you know,
they may have played before, but, you know.
Because no one's going to remember.
Exactly.
If you're recalling, say, Erling Haaland scoring a hat-trick on his debut for Manchester City, if somebody pipes up and went, well, actually, he scored one in a pre-season friendly against New York City FC in the Yankee Stadium. Like, that wouldn't be...
He's getting slammed down, not you.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think it's fine for them to be debuts. They're organised games. They have referees. And in some cases, they're part of sort of, you know, some tenuous named tournament like the Soccer Champions Tour or something like that. I think they're games, and in which case they're debuts, so no issue there.
I remember a few seasons ago, I was at a game with John Motson, of all people. There was some confusion over whether it was Jamie Vardy's like landmark goal, for the 100th goal or something, and there was a bit of confusion over whether the Community Shield counted.
Okay, yes. That is a really good... I remember
that
this
is a
being,
tricky one.
Yeah, I remember this being raised. I did a piece once on a player, and it was like 100 up and, you know, breaking down the goals or whatever. And someone did say like, oh, so you're including Community Shield, are you? I think you'll find it's actually on 99. And I hadn't actually realised. It was just everyone was including the Community Shield, Opta and whoever else. But I did think, does that count?
Technically a competitive match, I suppose.
Well, friendly, it's a trophy,
friendly,
isn't
friendly
it?
In spirit, but competitive.
I don't mind Community Shield being
on paper.
Involved.
Yeah, I think it counts.
Yeah, I it was more. I just hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, I think on balance, it should be.
Yeah, I think spiritually and officially, it's all right. Elsewhere in preseason, this is just fantastic. I mean, one thing we didn't cover in all the different types of preseason Premier League friendly was the one that ends up in a 22-man brawl. But this is a perfect example of it. Wolves preseason tour briefly descended into chaos on Thursday, as a series of flare-ups in their behind-closed-doors friendly against Levante led to four red cards. So Yerson Mosquera, Dave, and Daniel Podence were both shown red cards before half-time. Levante also had two players sent off, so it was 9 versus 9 at the start of the second half. Then the referee just said, oh, you can play 11 versus 11. So we're not counting any of this in official tallies, that's for sure. But the best part of all of this, the whole game, everything that happened, the chaos, the squaring up, was dubbed the Battle of Benidorm. I don't think this meets the threshold for Battle of.
No, I don't think you're getting a long read about it in 15 years' time, are you?
Oh, I don't know.
Right, that's pre-season matters taken care of. I really don't want to talk about pre-season friendlies ever again, but I do want to end the episode with this. The cult of Peter Drury really is bigger than most people would imagine. To play us out this week, this is from TikTok account Nuno De Man, and it is really rather surreal.
POV. You ask Peter Drury how his meal is.
Is everything all right for you, sir? Oh, but where to begin? The astounding arancini. The rich rice, coated in crispiness, was a superb starter, followed by the luscious linguine gamberoni, whose powerful prawns penetrated my panging belly with aplomb. Exquisite. And the dreamlike dessert of cannoli, the scintillating Sicilian dish, was the crown jewel of this immaculate Italian meal. And with a piercing Pinot Grigio to wash it all down, I dare say that this is the pinnacle of fine dining. Bellissimo!
Really not much more to add to that. Just absolutely terrifying the status at which Peter Drury has reached. David Walker, thanks to you for joining the adjudication panel.
Thank you.
Charlie, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. I'm glad I could do some cliches work out in Korea.
Yeah, good to know you understood what your real purpose was out there.
Fantastic. Exactly, yeah, always on.
Yeah, don't leave it so long next time, please. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.